WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. On this hump day, Wednesday, December 7th, 2016, we've got a great show in store for all of you out there as we will chat about the Michigan State men's basketball team as Tom Izzo's squad poured out a win over Youngstown State last night, a 20-point win, and an all-around solid effort from the Spartans after coming off of the dismal, to say the least, dub over Oral Roberts, in which Michigan State won by 4 points. Tom Izzo was not happy after that game this past weekend, but he was in much better spirits after the horn sounded at the Breslin last night. So we'll have coverage from that game last night. We will also engage in a bit of debate that I've heard multiple times throughout this week since the Heisman Trophy finalists have been announced. But Michigan Mr. Do-It-All, Jabril Peppers, has been criticized left and right. Many people feeling as though Jabril is a bit overrated. Jabril has heard the criticism, and he actually released an interesting quote that I'll be reading on today's show. But we will engage in a bit of debate on whether or not Mr. Peppers is indeed overrated. We will also invite our very own Scott Pohl to the show. Scott Pohl of Current State. He has a very cool story on the Michigan State wrestling team back in the 60s that won a national championship, profiling Dale Anderson, a member of that squad, who has a new book recounting that famed moment in Spartan wrestling history. You don't want to miss that. And on the back end of the show, we will talk about the Detroit Tigers, who are currently right now making no major moves on the trade market, again, for now. So we'll talk about that. And we'll also have a Wednesday version of what we like to dub Tickle Tuesday. We pushed that to today's show. A few moments I want to bring up. And we will say goodbye to two of our outstanding Current Sports production assistants who have done a remarkable job all semester. We will say goodbye to Ashley Gibbert and Kamen Kessler. But before we get to all of that, again, if you want to weigh in, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, last night, high school boys basketball got underway here in the area and throughout the entire state of Michigan. And just want to mention a few local scores here. Okemos defeated Lansing Catholic 48-39. Bath took down Stockbridge 57-44. Lansing Eastern fell to Williamston in a close one 57-53. Hazlitt outlasted Alma 64-60, and a team that everyone's talking about here in the area, East Lansing, just got past DeWitt 56-44, able to pull away late in that game. Brandon Johns, the best player in the area, had a solid game. We'll have more on that game later on in the hour. The MSU men's basketball team hosted Youngstown State last night, where they managed to record their second straight win, beating the Penguins 77-57. After beating Oral Roberts by just 4 points this past Saturday, the Spartans were looking to make this win a little more impressive, as they did so without leading scorer, yet again, Miles Bridges, the touted freshman who missed his second straight game due to a left ankle sprain. He was sighted in a boot on the bench last night. Now, Spartan scoring was led by freshman Josh Langford, who had a season-high 15 points. Nick Ward finished with 13 points, and it was a big night for the former walk-on Matt Van Dyke, who had a career-high 9 points. And Cassius Winston had complete control of this offense. We'll have more on Cassius Winston's night in just a moment. The Spartans' record improves to 6-4 on the year, and they will go for their third straight win when they host Tennessee Tech this Saturday at 2 p.m. The MSU women's basketball team was also in action, and they have also won two straight and had three players score in double digits last night in a 71-54 win over Quinnipiac. Now, scoring, of course, was led by who other than senior guard Tori Jankowska, who had 18 points, 12 boards. Jankowska now has double-doubles in two straight games. She also matched a career high with 12 boards. Freshman forward Nia Holly matched her career high with 12 points, and junior guard Lexi Gussert had a season's best, also with 12 points as well. The Spartans improved to 8-2 and will look to make it 9 when they travel to Rhode Island for a game on Thursday at 7 p.m. The University of Michigan men's basketball team managed to pull out a win in the last 2 minutes last night for a 53-50 dub over the Texas Longhorns. Now the Wolverines led by as many as 10 points in the first half, but the second half was much tighter. Neither team led by more than 3 in the last 17 minutes of the game. Down by 2 with under 2 minutes to go, Morris Wagner managed to make good on free throws and offensive putback to give the Spartans a 3-point lead. The Longhorns would have a chance to win with their final possession of the game, but a game-winning defensive block also by Wagner would secure the victory for U of M. Michigan improves to 7-2 as they now head out west to face number 2 UCLA on Saturday. UCLA looks very, very good this season as well. Michigan quarterback Shane Morris is exploring options to become a graduate transfer. He is a fourth-year junior due to a redshirt season and will graduate from Michigan, giving him the option to become a graduate transfer with 1 year of eligibility remaining. Now, Morris was an ESPN 300 quarterback when he committed to U of M as a sophomore in high school. He has been cleared to play immediately if any school decides to pick him up in that transfer. This morning, Michigan football star and Heisman Trophy finalist, Mr. Do-It-All, Jabril Peppers, was named the 2016 Paul Hornung Award winner as the nation's most versatile player. This season, Peppers played a whopping 15 different positions. Peppers played 726 snaps on defense, 154 on special teams, and 53 on offense. Now, we finished the 2016 regular season with 72 tackles, 4 sacks, 1 INT, 8 quarterback hurries, and 1 forced fumble on defense. He returned 21 points, punts for over 300 yards and a touchdown, and he also rushed 27 times for 167 yards and 3 TDs. Other finalists for the award were Stanford running back Christian McCaffrey, USC's Adoree Jackson, and Oklahoma wide receiver Dade Westbrook. Also earlier this week, again, he is a Heisman Trophy finalist, and there's a lot of buzz surrounded around Jabril. Most certainly when it comes to whether or not he deserves to be a Heisman Trophy Award finalist. And it poses the question whether or not Jabril Peppers is overrated. We will debate that later this hour. I want to hear your thoughts. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. To the pros. The Detroit Pistons topped the Chicago Bulls last night at home, 102-91. The Pistons were led by 22 points from Tobias Harris, who shot 9 of 16 on the night, while Jimmy Butler led the game with 32 points. The key difference was Detroit outshooting the Bulls from three-point land, Chicago just hitting 2 of 15. The Pistons have a quick turnaround when they play tonight in Charlotte at 7 p.m. Denzel Valentine, of course, made his return to the great state of Michigan, the Lansing native, former Michigan State hoop great. He did not play, but the experience that he is getting alongside a veteran like Dwayne Wade is truly invaluable. So I saw some coverage last night from actually WLNS TV6 as they were out there covering Denzel's return. Just good to see Zell back in the friendly confines of Michigan. All right, the Detroit Red Wings, last but not least, have picked up back-to-back 4-3 wins after taking down the Winnipeg Jets in a shootout last night. Detroit fell behind 3-1, before a pair of goals in the second tied the game at three. In the shootout, Peter Mrazek stopped 3 of 4, and Thomas Vanek and Henrik Zetterberg both converted to give the Wings the edge. Detroit will look to make the win streak 3 when they return home to host the Blue Jackets on Friday. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, if you have thoughts on any of those or anything on your sports noggin, you know that number. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Let's start the show.
Tom, during the broadcast, Tim McCormick actually said he got a text from my team, Cleve, saying that, quote, Cassius will be a better leader than me. I'm curious, do you see any similarities? That's a tall order, I know. Do you see any similarity between Cassius and my team? And also a two-parter, have you talked to my team in the result of what took place in the courtroom this week?
Well, I bet $1 million. You already know I did that. Right from practice, to be honest with you, when I found out, that was one thing. Mateen's got to get down here a little more right now because Cassius is getting better. But, you know, the leadership things is something that, you know, we're going to keep hammering on. Because if he does get that, he's going to be a hell of a player. I think he's a very good player now, but I think, you know, a little more defensive intensity and a little more leadership ability. But he took a big step tonight because I challenged him a couple of huddles of, you know, can you go out there now? You're a little tired. Can you play good defense now? Can you lead this team? Can you run us? And one time they went zone and he made a call and I thought they were man and I made a different call and he yelled at me. So it was kind of good, you know. I kind of enjoy that stuff personally, but
And that is how we start this Wednesday afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports. So glad you've allowed us to be a part of your weekday afternoon. I am your host, Al Martin. And you just heard the voice of Michigan State men's basketball head coach, the Hall of Famer, Tom Izzo, as he addressed us media members after the 77-57 win over the Youngstown State Penguins. Michigan State now with the dub improves to 6-4 on the season, 4-0 in the friendly confines of the Breslin Center. And the big storyline for me coming out of that game was the young stud that he is, Mr. Cassius Winston. This was the best basketball game that I've seen Cassius play in all year. In complete control of the offense, folks. Cassius, a kid who is currently coming off the bench. We all know that Lou Rawls, Tum Tum, Nearing Jr. holds down the starting spot for Michigan State right now at that point guard position right now. But I think that may change as the year moves along here. Last night, Cassius played 25 minutes, was 4 of 10 from the floor. He finished with 8 points, 9 assists, and 4 rebounds. You know, when you look at this Michigan State men's basketball team, one thing that really strikes you, and I mentioned how Cassius was one assist away of double-digit assist numbers, is that this team is so unselfish. So unselfish. And that can be a catch-22 in my eyes. I mean, when you look at it, though, last night it was not a catch-22. It's exactly what you want from this team. 28 assists on 34 made buckets. That's mind-blowing. I mean, that's called not just sharing the basketball, but sharing the basketball to a point where you take a good shot from the floor, where you're not passing up a wide-open look at the basket. And that was the problem that has been a problem of Michigan State's all year, especially when you look at what took place this past weekend against Oral Roberts. I mean, a guy's just too unselfish, passing up wide-open jumpers. And a lot of that has to do with confidence, and a lot of that has to do with just trying to make sure the offense flows the way it is supposed to flow. As that game went along in the first half, and Youngstown State was able to knock down jumpers, and Youngstown State, they are a solid shooting team. Solid shooting team. I mean, they hit a lot of three-pointers last night. They actually took 24 three-pointers last night, hit 8 of them. And, you know, at first, in the beginning of that game, those three-pointers is what kept Youngstown State in the matchup. But, you know, you look at Michigan State in that second half, they came out with a renewed energy. Just a renewed energy all around. They seemed more in tune with the offense, and they seemed to pick it up defensively as well. And that's something that really stood out to me. And I got a chance to ask, you know, Cassius Winston as well as Aaron Harris last night, and you can view my post-game report right now on our Facebook page. If you go to facebook.com/currentsports, we put together our two-minute drill segment surrounded around what took place last night. And I got a chance to ask Cassius as well as Aaron, what exactly was the difference today? You know, I mean, what have the last few days been like coming off of the disappointing win? I don't know if a win can ever be disappointing, because at the end of the day, you did win. But it depends on who you're talking to, right? Again, talking to Tom Izzo after that 4-point win over Oral Roberts, it did not feel like a win in Tom's eyes. And he challenged his team, saying that his team did not play hard enough. We talked about that extensively on Monday's show. And, you know, I just want to know what the last few days have been like, because, you know, Izzo, you know, he mentioned how on Sunday they were going to practice 2, maybe even 3 times, and they were going to have elongated film sessions to try and correct what has not been fluid with this team on both sides of the court. And Cassius just simply said, you know, this team challenged us from an energy standpoint. Energy. We had more energy tonight. That's what Cassius said. And to directly quote him, he said this, quote, "They've been honest about energy and our toughness. I mean, at some point, you're not just going to sit there and let nobody call you soft or anything like that, or allow someone to tell you that you're not competing," end quote. So Tom, just evaluating that direct quote from the lips of Cassius Winston, Tom has challenged this team since Saturday. And from the looks of things, now again, it is Youngstown State, so let's not go flipping our wigs and throwing a party here. You're supposed to do that to Youngstown State. Heck, they were supposed to do that to Oral Roberts on Saturday. This is what you saw last night was how the game was supposed to go against Oral Roberts. And it was just an all-around solid effort. I was very impressed with this squad. And you heard me pose the question to Tom Izzo. I was listening to the broadcast and watching the broadcast along with our engineer Isaac Constance. We were in the press conference room right at tip-off. And Tim McCormick, the analyst on ESPNU that did the game last night, Tim McCormick, he mentioned how he got a text during that game last night from none other than one of the greatest leaders this program has ever seen, in Mateen Cleaves. And Cleaves texts McCormick saying that Cassius Winston will be, he didn't say has the potential to be or, you know, could be, he said Cassius Winston will be a better leader than me. That's exactly what Tim McCormick ran on his cellular device during the broadcast last night. Now, let's pump the brakes a bit. As you heard from Tom, when I posed that question to him, you could kind of see his face say, eh. And he went on to say it's not going to happen in a year, without a doubt. And Cash is, you know, he has to grow when it comes to his leadership. But what we saw last night is Cash is making steps towards becoming better in all facets of his game. When it comes to facilitating the basketball, when it comes to picking and choosing his spots to score on the floor, when it comes to his leadership, when it comes to adhering to advice from Tom Izzo, when it comes to modifying advice from Tom Izzo. I mean, you heard Tom say there was a play in which, you know, Tom called one formation of offense when evaluating the defense, and it happened to be that Tom was wrong, and Cassius yells at Tom and says, "No, coach, that's not how it's supposed to be." Tom loves that stuff because it shows that his team is connected by the brain. They're all thinking and they're all willing to correct one another if they see something else. I love that. And it shows that Cassius is developing leadership. And I posed a question to Cassius afterwards. I mean, what do you think about that Mateen Cleaves text? And he went on to say, man, that's a tall order right there. You know, that's a lot to live up to. That's a lot to live up to. And I hope I can do that as my career unfolds here. But I was very impressed with Cassius Winston. Some other players I want to just kind of throw out there. One of the big storylines is Nick Ward coming into that game. Nick Ward, by far, Tom Izzo says, has been the most improved player when looking at where this team started at the very beginning of workouts to where they are right now in the season. Nick Ward went 6 of 10 from the floor. Got to work on those free throws, though. That's what I got to say about Nick, because he's going to get fouled down there. You know, he's very aggressive. He likes to be very physical down low, and with that comes trips to the foul line, to the charity stripe. And I thought that Nick could have been more efficient from the free throw line. He was 1 of 6 from the free throw line, but this is a stat that really blows my mind. Nick Ward, 1 of 6 from the free throw line. Guess what Michigan State as a whole from the free throw line shot? 1 of 6. Nick Ward was the only player throughout the duration of that game that got to the free throw line. That can't happen. I don't know when's the last time, Isaac, we've seen. And that's a stat that I didn't realize until I was at home editing. Until I was at home, because the question wasn't even posed in the press conference. And I think that's, you know, to us fault as media members. We should have picked that up. But I didn't realize that I was sitting at home compiling the 2-minute drill when I'm going through the stat sheet. And I'm like, okay, Nick Ward, 1 of 6. Okay, what did everybody else shoot? 0 for 0. Are you kidding me? That is uncharacteristic for this team. Now, there are a lot of factors that factor into that. You know, you have Miles Bridges out. This team lacks size, so I think this team likes to hang out around the perimeter a little bit too much instead of driving in. I mean, really, the only player that we really see drive the basketball is maybe, what, Tum Tum when he's in transition? Occasionally, we did see Cassius Winston. You captured it on camera. I actually used that as one of the highlights on the 2-minute drill last night. But Cassius drives in. He had a spin move. He throws it off the glass, gets his own rebound, and goes right back up for the layup. But, you know, it's rare when you see one of the Michigan State players just say, you know what, I'm about to take you off this first step and go to the hole and try to create contact or finish at the basket. But one player going to the free throw line the entire game, that's got to be a bit alarming.
Well, and what's irksome about that for Tom Izzo, I'm sure, is the fact that it's not as if Youngstown State didn't have fouls called on them. It's not as if the refs had more than a few run-ins with the MSU head coach. So the thing is, this was just a matter of aggression for the team. Now, as you mentioned, part of that's strategic. Part of that is by design for Tom Izzo. This team shot 25 three-pointers last night. Made 8. Not necessarily a great rate, but not a bad one either. And the team, as a whole, was swinging the ball around the perimeter. We saw Youngstown State multiple times last night go into a 2-3 zone, and MSU's response always was a 4 across, a formation I'm sure you're familiar with. It's big in high school basketball, placing Nick Young solely down low. And what Youngstown State would do if they ever felt overwhelmed is they would hack him. Not when he shot, sometimes when he shot, but other times when he was posting up just to prevent him from getting that established position in the first place. So MSU as a whole, they wanted to stretch this team. They wanted to make them run around. They wanted the majority of inside chances to go to Nick Ward, and they wanted the rest of the perimeter buckets to fall to other players. And you did see that payoff for guys like Matt McQuaid, who finally started to get a little bit of a groove last night in double figures, as well as Josh Langford.
Without a doubt, that's another point I want to bring up. When you look at those numbers, you have to take into account that Youngstown State did move to a 2-3 zone in that game. And how do you disrupt the 2-3 zone? Well, you move the ball around the perimeter and get an open jump shot. And that's exactly what happened on multiple times down the floor. Josh Langford, you know, that's another kid. You just brought him up, Isaac. Another kid that I want to tip my cap to. Finally seeing him get into a rhythm, so to speak, right? 6 of 8 from the floor. He was 3 of 4 from three-point land. He finished with 15 points. That's the most he scored in a green and white jersey so far in his young basketball career. But from a confidence standpoint, it was really nice just to see Josh, you know, when the ball moved around to him, take that three-pointer in confidence, and then you saw him emotionally get riled up about it. I mean, he would go down the court yelling at himself, pounding his chest, slapping the hardwood. Just to see Josh Langford in tune with the game, that was fun to watch. And I thought in that second half, just looking at the tape of that second half from last night, Michigan State's half-court offense was pretty fluid. I would say from the 15-minute mark on, Michigan State they were running different plays. They were just in a groove, just really moving the basketball around, and it led to multiple opportunities for various players. And Aaron Harris, 6 of 14, 1 of 7. I still think that we can, you know, Michigan State can get so much more out of Aaron Harris. You know, sometimes I think that, and Aaron is a talent. I mean, we're talking about a kid who averaged 17 points I believe it was his sophomore year in which he transferred. He's averaging 17 points per game in his sophomore season at West Virginia. And you look at Aaron, and some of the plays he makes are athletic. He's got a great mid-range jumper. He's got a solid first step. I love the way he can handle the basketball. He's quick. We have still yet to see Aaron Harris blossom. And I really do believe that it's a mental thing with him, because I think that Aaron defers to his teammates a little too often. I think that Aaron sometimes mentally checks out in a way. And Aaron is one of those players that, and we've seen multiple players like this in the game of basketball, where if they don't get involved early, they kind of just disappear. If Aaron is not involved early and takes maybe one or two jump shots in the first 5 minutes, just to get him in that rhythm of just seeing the basket and just getting the feel for the game, you know, Aaron, he can kind of go Ghostbusters on you. You know what I mean? And I think that he'll get better with that with time. And his numbers look solid last night. I mean, he took the most shots on the team last night, and I think he should take the most shots on the team. I think Aaron Harris is that kind of a talent. 6 of 14, just 1 of 7 from the three-point line. He struggled from deep, but a solid 14 attempts from the floor for Aaron, I can live with that, Isaac.
Well, and what this is, and he actually addressed it in his press conference or in his post-game interview, and it was in some ways a matter of psyche. The thing is, he came to this program from West Virginia. Bob Huggins does a great job over there, but he was the predominant man on that roster. He was their go-to scorer. He comes to MSU, and suddenly not only does he have competition for that role, but as he said in the post-game interview, MSU is very much a move-it-around type team, a multiple-pass offense. It's not a get one guy the ball, let him go ISO on the wing. And Aaron Harris said that's what he's a little bit more accustomed to. So in many ways, even though it's been 2 years now on this roster, on the team, he's still got a little bit of fitting in to do, in my opinion. I think you can see that at any time. And I think Matt McQuaid as well. That's a similar situation for him this year. They asked him to take a little bit of a different role coming in without Bryn Forbes or Denzel Valentine. They need him to stretch the floor a little bit more, but they also need him to maybe penetrate and make a few plays as well. And the thing is, once you get a few instructions from the coach, It just takes adjustment. There's no problem with it from any single person necessarily. But if a coach tells you, hey, you're a three-point shooter, we want you to drive a little bit more, suddenly on one open three, you're going to start to second-guess yourself and say, maybe I should drive this one. Maybe I should pass this one. And I do think that's what's going on in the heads of both Matt McQuaid and Aaron Harris.
Also, I want to give a shout-out. You know, other than Aaron Harris's offensive game, I thought defensively, Aaron Harris did a solid job. He was aggressive on the boards as well. Aaron Harris finished with 7 boards, also had 1 steal, and also 2 blocks in that game. Aaron Harris defensively is getting better and better by the day, and I think a lot of it has to do with a name that we don't bring up much offensively, but Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nairn Jr., the best defensive guard on that team. I'm starting to see Tum Tum rub off on Aaron Harris. I don't know if you see the same thing.
Well, he had his best game last night, I thought, of the season, because he got 3 rebounds on the game, 7 assists as well. But what he was doing is pushing the pace, and this team needed that more than anything else.
Right.
Once Youngstown State started to catch fire and claw their way back into that game, I thought Tum Tum Nairn was the difference maker, as well as one last name, Matt Van Dyke, a team high rebounds that game. 9 on the game, and they asked him to fit into a bigger position, a bigger mold than he's accustomed to. He did it phenomenally.
Michigan State shot over 50% from the floor, and it's always a good game anytime you can put in a walk-in like Greg Roy. And hey, how about even Connor George getting some playing time? They both played 1 minute in that game, but it's always a good sign anytime you can put in those players. And Greg Roy actually was the recipient of an Alvin Ellis layup alley-oop at the end, which was pretty nice.
So, oh, it was great.
Yeah, that was pretty, and it was good to see them, those two smile as they walked off the court and the bench go nuts when that bucket converted for Roy. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite current state's own Scott Pohl to the show. He's got a great chat with Dale Anderson, member of the 1967 MSU National Championship Wrestling Team. That and more. Don't go anywhere.
The BBC World Service.
You're listening to the newsroom.
This is Clip.
Welcome to Assignment.
Welcome to From Our Own Correspondent.
Hello and welcome to Global Business.
Welcome to Hard Talk.
Welcome to The Y Factor.
This is Science and Action.
Welcome to More or Less.
Welcome to Outlook.
It's time for Witness.
Hello and welcome along to The Arts Hour.
Great to have you on World Have Your Say.
Welcome to Sport Today.
BBC News.
The World Service from the BBC.
The BBC on AM 870 WKAR.
The 1960s has to be seen as the greatest era in Michigan State University sports history. The MSU hockey team won a national championship in 66. The men's soccer team won national crowns in 67 and 68. And of course, the Spartan football team won championships in 65 and 66. Now, there's another MSU team that won a national title in the 60s. And our very own Scott Pohl is here with a member of the 1967 National Championship Wrestling Team. Scott, who is he?
Well, his name is Dale Anderson. He came to MSU from West Waterloo High School in Iowa. That's a school that has produced more wrestling champions than anybody. You're on the young side for this, Al, but guys in my age range will remember the great Olympic champion Dan Gable. Dan Gable later coached Iowa to 15 national championships. Well, Gable was 2 years behind Dale Anderson at West Waterloo High. He tells me the rags-to-riches story of the 1967 champions in a new book called A Spartan Journey, Michigan State's 1967 Miracle on the Mat. Dale Anderson talked about the sports atmosphere on campus in those days, including his time working at football games during the championship years.
When I first arrived, I was not on scholarship, so I actually worked in the press box, and I did note that in my book, and it was fun being in the press box and working up there and seeing us go undefeated those years. At least we went undefeated at home and went almost undefeated completely during those couple of years. that I worked the press box. And that was it was a real fun time in that way. I only went to a couple of hockey games, but I did go to some gymnastics where we had national champions. We had national champions in swimming, individual national champions. We had individual national champions in track. We had a championship team in soccer. So we really had the best athletic program in the country in the mid-60s. I doubt there would be a lot of debate about that. They didn't have a Sears Cup back then, or a Director's Cup, that where you had some objective criteria as to who won. But I think, without any doubt, we had the best athletic program in the country, and it was very exciting to be a part of that.
Now, it's my understanding that prior to winning the national championship in 1967, the MSU wrestling program wasn't particularly good. In fact, two or three years earlier had finished dead last in the Big Ten. Do I have that right?
You do. My senior year in high school, Michigan State finished last in the Big Ten. They only had 10 schools then, and Michigan State only scored 1 point in the Big Ten tournament. And ironically, as a bit of trivia, even more trivia, our heavyweight fell on the heavyweight he was wrestling, and so the heavyweight that he was wrestling had to forfeit, had to take a medical forfeit, or we'd have had 0 points in the Big Ten tournament. So we were awful. We were just awful. And it was one of the reasons I state in my book that it was a miracle, was one of the main reasons it's a miracle, was that I don't think there's ever been a team or a program that took last in their conference and then 3 years later won the national championship. I don't think that's ever happened, and I don't think it ever will happen except with us.
How do you explain a turnaround like that?
We had a lot of walk-ons that, for some reason, really caught the fever. I mean, I was technically a walk-on, but we had some regular walk-ons that caught the fever. But if I were to say, if you ask me what one thing was maybe the most important, was our coach, the head coach, recruited a guy who was a high school wrestler of his who became an Olympic champion, and his name was Doug Bluebaugh. Doug was a fantastic assistant coach and kind of attracted a lot of great wrestlers around him during the next couple of years. So I would kind of suggest, the head coach at the time was Grady Penninger, also a great coach. So when those two coaches got together and, you know, sort of picked up the program, the next thing you know, we were Big Ten champions in 66 and then national champions in 67. And actually, we started a seven-year streak of Big Ten championships. And Michigan State, no team at Michigan State or program has ever had seven Big Ten championships in a row.
We're talking with Dale Anderson. Dale was a national champion wrestler at Michigan State University, a member of the NCAA championship team in 1967, and he's written a book about that team called Miracle on the Mat. I want to ask you about the atmosphere at a home wrestling meet in those days. You said the team won the Big Ten championship in 67. You get 66. You get into that 67 season. Where were the home matches held, and what was the atmosphere like at those matches?
When I attended the meets my freshman year, we couldn't wrestle our freshman year. I would just attend the meets. None of the wrestlers could even get their girlfriends to come and watch. you could hear a pin drop in the gym, and we wrestled in the men's intramural gym there, and it was almost scary. I remember my high school meets where we would fill the gym so full you couldn't get one other person in the gym to watch the meet. And then all of a sudden, our sophomore year, because we were so aggressive as a team, everything changed. And people started wanting to come to the meets and watch us wrestle. And by the time, right during 67, 68, we actually moved our meets to Jennison Fieldhouse. And because we just couldn't hold them in that little men's gym anymore. For me, I love that little gym because you could get 1,500 or 2,000 in that little area, the intramural gym there. And it was fun. It was just like a great electric atmosphere. And that was a lot of people.
You're coming up on a 50th anniversary. How much are you in touch with the teammates from that team? And are you maybe going to get together next year to celebrate?
We are planning, and apparently Michigan State is planning some anniversary events next year. And I'm not sure what those celebrations are going to involve, but I do. I did send the drafts to people on our team. I do communicate with people on our old team. The best part of the our old team is that they're all still alive. I mean, I was really surprised. Most, the vast majority of people from my high school wrestling team have now passed on. But everybody on that team is still alive. And another irony is that the person that was the most instrumental probably in our winning died. That was the assistant coach, Doug Bluebaugh. And he passed a few years ago, but everybody else is still alive, and we're all going to try to get together this next year and see if we can do a celebration of our 50-year anniversary winning the national championship there.
We haven't really talked about any of the stories in your book. Do you have a favorite story that you'd like to tell?
My favorite story by far, 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 far and away, happened the year afterwards in 1968. I was a junior in 67, and then I was a senior in 68. And we had wrestled the University of Michigan every year, my freshman through my junior year, and they had beaten us every year. In fact, they had won the Big Ten most of the time up until we showed up. So they had beaten us in the dual meet every time. And we had drawn some pretty big crowds. Well, my senior year, Michigan starts out the year. This is the year after we won the national. Michigan starts out as the number one team in the country. And we started out, I think, as number two. So during the dual meet, we're getting a pep talk from our head coach. And what had happened every year up until this is we were ahead going into the heavyweight match. And the Michigan heavyweight, who was a national champion, pinned our heavyweight, and that's why we lost. So this year, my senior year, we had by far a better team than they did. And so the head coach is giving us a pep talk, and he says, everybody should win their match today except the heavyweight. That's the only match we should lose. Well, Grady's speech really ticked our heavyweight off, really ticked him off. So he's steaming for like 2 hours, and a whole bunch of bizarre things happened to me. By the way, this was in Jennison, and the place was packed. So a lot of excitement. Everybody's down around the mat. And a lot of weird things happened that suddenly, when we go into the heavyweight match, we are behind by 2 points. So our heavyweight is getting ready to go out, and I go over to give him a little pep talk, and it's so obvious to me that he's in the zone that he was just going berserk. He goes out there, takes their heavyweight down, and pins him. Now, as soon as our heavyweight went out to wrestle their heavyweight, everybody leaves. They start walking out the door because they know our heavyweight has no chance to beat this national champion, none. It was impossible. And so our heavyweight then goes out and pins him, and he has him on his back 3 or 4 times before he pins him. So the classic part happens a little bit later in a sequel. Grady says, this is the most exciting moment in my wrestling career, and it probably was my most exciting. They've named it as maybe the number one wrestling meet of all time. Well, sometime later, the guy who was the heavyweight for Michigan, this national champion, wants to buy a gun from our coach, Grady. He goes over to Grady's house, and Grady has this enormous poster right by where he's selling the gun that shows the Michigan heavyweight getting pinned. And the Michigan heavyweight says to Grady, you know I wasn't really pinned. And Grady, for effect, stops for a minute and then says, which time?
What a surprise that an MSU athlete's favorite memory has to do with a victory over Michigan.
When we won the Nationals, Michigan took second. And it's the first time in history that either an Oklahoma or an Iowa school didn't win first or second. That's the very first time ever that that happened. So it's just kind of classic that Michigan and Michigan State took over the wrestling championships back then.
The MSU wrestling team won the national championship in 1967. Dale Anderson was a member of that team. He won a national championship at 137 pounds himself that season, and he's written a book about that season called Miracle on the Mat. Dale Anderson, great talking with you.
Same here. Thanks for calling.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
And we are here on Current Sports Now, live in studio with our very own Scott Pohl. A quick postscript, Scott. First of all, that was a very fun interview. We were just cracking up just a minute ago about the story. You know, of course, as a Spartan, your most fondest memory would be against U of M, right? But how cool was it just getting a chance to chat with Dale and pick his brain about that story time in MSU sports?
Well, did you ever wrestle?
I did not. Okay. No, just basketball.
I wrestled very poorly in high school.
Did you?
Yes, very poorly. Never wrestled varsity even.
Right.
You know, so I have an appreciation for the skill and the strength that it takes to be a good competitive wrestler.
Right.
So I started with that mindset.
Of course.
And to me, the most amazing part of that story is a head coach selling a gun to an athlete from his rival and having this enormous poster of the guy losing to us
right
next to where he's selling him the gun.
Oh, my goodness.
That is one of the funniest sports stories I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? And then we were chatting about, you know, and you heard Dale talk about how, you know, when he first started wrestling for the program, they're in this tiny gym.
Right.
At what is now, I believe, IM West,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And they eventually moved to Jenison, but you know, when you put, you know, a little over 1,000 people inside of one gym,
right?
I mean, the atmosphere had to be off the charts. And now, you know, since they made the move to Jenison, it's just amazing how the program has grown over time. And it's remarkable when you look back to the '60s and evaluate what took place in MSU sports. It really just blows your mind.
Well, you know, wrestling's not the only sport that has moved around on campus like that. I mean, I used to work with the women's basketball program, and they played games in the IM West very early on when I worked with the team. And then they moved to Jenison before finally moving on to Breslin. So, and volleyball used to play in that gym and are now playing their home matches in Jenison Fieldhouse. So it's not unusual that these teams, as they need bigger arenas with greater seating, have moved into the bigger spaces on campus.
Very true. Well, all right, Scott, before we hit our second break here, again, a Spartan journey, Michigan State's 1967 Miracle on the Mat. When was this released?
It's been out a month or so, I think. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun to see Dale and his teammates when they come back to campus next year sometime, though.
And that was my final question for you. I had in my notes here that they are planning something, some sort of 50th anniversary celebration. And it's remarkable that they all are still here walking Earth.
Isn't that great?
That's fantastic. I mean, you rarely hear that, right?
They all have to be crowding 70 years old. And at that point, that they're all still alive is pretty remarkable.
The only member not part of the team is the assistant coach, the late assistant coach, Doug Bluba, right? Wow. Unbelievable stuff. So I'm excited to see what they plan on doing. I'm sure Mark Hollis has something up his sleeve for that, right?
Oh, I'm sure he does.
Scott Pohl. Scott, thank you so
much. Always fun, Al. Thanks.
That was a great interview. All right, let's hit our second interview. Our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's Current Sports by chatting about the Detroit Tigers actually laying low as of right now on the trade market. And we'll also say goodbye to two of our fantastic production assistants this semester, Ashley Gibbert and Kamen Kessler. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. I wanted to pose this question to you all. I introed it when we first began the show. Jabril Peppers is a dynamic player, folks, for the Maize and Blue. It's remarkable when you evaluate all of the different positions this young man plays. 15 different positions this season alone. Yeah, 15. Let that soak in for a second. He logged 933 snaps, 726 on defense, 154 on special teams, 53 on offense. Get this, that's nearly 78 snaps a game. It's remarkable when you just look at how versatile this player is. Evident now, he has some hardware that he can attest it to. As Peppers, he took home the Hornung Award as the nation's most versatile player this week, and he'll be honored later on out in Kentucky, I believe. But, you know, it sparked up a lot of debate, though, from the sports world, especially, and I really saw this conversation actually started when Jabril won Defensive Player of the Year, because, and I have to tend to agree here, when you look at his numbers defensively, there were other players in the Big Ten Conference that you could have made an argument for. Jabril getting the invite to head to New York, to head to Manhattan for the Heisman Trophy ceremony later this week. There are a lot of people that don't even agree with that, right? And I personally think it's Lamar Jackson's award to win. But Jabril is an interesting guy because he's so versatile. He's so athletic. He's a game changer when the football is in his hands. But the numbers may not back up and justify whether or not he deserved an invitation to Manhattan. Jabril has heard the chatter. There are a lot of cowards behind keyboards is what I like to call them, as well as what Tom Izzo likes to call them. And many people have actually added Jabril via Twitter. And Jabril has heard the criticism. And this is what he had to say this week. Quote, people constantly tweet at me on Twitter, saying stuff they never say in my presence. It's just crazy to me. All this stems from me doing what I love. I don't understand it. But you know, like my brother always told me, to whom much is given, much is expected. It's my responsibility to handle it the right way, end quote. And Jabril has handled it better than most, Isaac. Jabril Peppers, overrated or not?
It's an eloquent response, but I've got to say, if he was in this room, I'd still tell him I don't think he deserves to be number one or number two or number three in the Heisman Trophy race. I think he's a fantastic player. He is versatile. He's dynamic. He's multifaceted. The thing is, he just didn't have as good of a season as, let's see, Tyrann Mathieu did two seasons ago when he had two return touchdowns for TDs, and then he also had two interceptions that he returned for TDs, forced a bunch of fumbles, had more tackles than Peppers, more defensive plays in general. The thing is, Peppers gives this team something that they can't replace when it comes to a jack-of-all-trades type perspective. What he doesn't give them is on the offensive end, he's not their best running back. Let's be real.
No,
Three of his touchdowns on the season come from running it in. It's fantastic that he has the ability to do that. He would be the best running back on other teams. Sometimes, though, Harbaugh just likes to show off and play with his new toy. And I can't blame him for that. But Jabril Peppers, one of the best players in the nation, so versatile. But no, he's not deserving of the Heisman Trophy.
You can say this. He's the most unique player in the country.
Yeah,
he's the most dynamic player in the country.
He played 15 positions.
Right.
Nobody else does.
No one else can do that. No one else can do that. Is he the best player? Probably not. No.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
I mean, he made 72 tackles, 16 for loss, 4 sacks, 1 INT, 1 forced fumble on defense. There are many other players that you can bring up for that Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year award. Heck, there are many players across the nation. Don't even let me get started in other conferences that you can bring up in that conversation as well. It's the Michigan effect, though. That is why he got the invite to Manhattan. Michigan had a great season. Jabril playing all these different positions. It's a great story. He's a playmaker as well. It draws more eyeballs to the two, but he's not going to win. With less than 5 minutes left here, I want to invite, for the final time, Isaac, We have two of our fantastic production assistants who have done a great job all year. I'm going to give them the mic in just a second to say goodbye to all of our listeners out there. They've done a fantastic job, as I mentioned. We have Ashley Gibbert as well as Kamen Kessler in the house. And Kamen, before I give you guys the mic to say goodbye to the lovely people out there, Kamen, you have been raising your hand the entire conversation. You want to chime in really briefly on the whole Jabril Peppers ordeal?
So for me, I just want to know how much record plays into who gets invited to the Heisman, finale there, the Final Five. Because if you look at the stats, Deonta Foreman, the running back from Texas, his stats are better than running backs who have won the Heisman in the past. And you're saying he's not a top five player in the country because Texas is 5-7. So I'm not saying Jabril doesn't deserve to be considered. I don't think he's a top five player in the country in terms of Heisman voting. I don't think he's excelled in any of his roles. He's very versatile. That's what we've talked about. I think the Michigan effect and the fact that Michigan's been winning has a lot to do with it. But that Foreman snub, that gets to me.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And again, he's not going to win.
Well, and the thing is, too, when it's Michigan as well, they want the Heisman candidate from Michigan, especially on the returner and the defensive side, just like Desmond Howard trying to replicate the whole Charles Woodson thing, the only defensive player ever to win. He's not going to win. He's so versatile, most versatile, unique player in the country, like you said. But nah, come on, man.
Ashley, you've done a great job all year for us. I want to hand the all mic over to Kamen and Ashley. And what did you guys get from this semester? What did you like about coming on Current Sports? And give us an update on what you plan on doing, because you are a senior and we'll be crossing that stage in May. How scary is that?
Yeah.
It's going to be kind of scary, right?
Yeah. Wow. I learned a lot this semester. I'm going to be honest. When I heard this was part of the class, I was terrified. I was.
Where are you?
But actually, it turns out that I really like this. I like radio. And so maybe that's something I'll look into pursuing. Coming up, let's see. I have to do an internship in the summer, and I'm really hoping I get one in New York. I definitely want to leave Michigan for at least a little while and then maybe come back. We'll see.
Yeah, who likes the snow, right? But even New York has snow, though, so
right,
I don't know.
Right.
But it's New York, so
yeah.
I get it. Well, Ashley, we wish you well, and we appreciate all your hard work throughout these last few months here on the show.
Thank you. It's fun.
Kamen, say goodbye, my man.
Well, I'm just glad I got to join the show, so I had other people to talk sports with, so I didn't annoy my girlfriend more.
This is your place to vent, huh? I'm guessing.
Oh yeah. There's only so much she can take.
Now, what are you up to now? I mean, after this semester, I mean, you're a senior, I believe, as well, right?
I'm a senior, but I'll be coming back for one extra semester next year. I'll graduate in December. I needed to get additional credits for. I'm getting two different degrees. One of them being the sports journalism. So
nice.
I'll be returning for that, but I'm looking into applied to quite a few internships over the summer, so that's what I'll be doing with my free time.
Well, I want to wish you luck as well. I should ask this to both of you guys really quickly. What's your dream job, Kamen?
I'd love to be a play-by-play or analyst commentating. I love to talk sports, so.
Ashley?
I want to do football sideline reporting like Aaron Andrews.
That's my favorite question, because you got to speak it into existence if you really want it, right? Ashley, Kamen, thank you guys so much. You will be missed for sure. Pop in from time to time, all right?
All right, thank you, Al.
All right, 1 minute left here on Current Sports. Again, want to remind you all that we will have the 2-minute drill for today posted in about an hour or so via Facebook.com/Current Sports. I want to give a big thanks to our very own Scott Paul, a great feature on MSU's wrestling star back in the 60s for part of that national championship team in the late 60s, Mr. Dale Anderson. That was a great chat. And a big thanks goes out to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic Wednesday afternoon. And be easy, people.